Instead of the program originally scheduled for this time, we bring you an address by Philip Murray, President of the Congress of Industrial Organizations. His subject is Keep Labor Free. Mr. Murray speaks from Washington.
I am speaking to you tonight on behalf of 5 million American working men and women, members of the Congress of Industrial Organizations, who are ready and eager to do their utmost to defend our country against the outrageous aggression of Japanese imperialism, and to secure the final defeat of the forces of Hitler, which have plunged the whole world into a bloody war in their drive to enslave the human race. The outbreak of war has increased 100-fold the importance of the message which I'll bring tonight on behalf of these millions of Americans. It is an urgent message of the necessity for immediately enlisting the full cooperation of all elements in the production of the weapons of war and other materials needed for the success of our national effort. The members of the Congress of Industrial Organizations are the men and women employed in the basic defense industries who are daily doing the most important work of actual production. Upon their efforts and the enthusiastic cooperation which they have pledged depends our nation's safety as much as upon the fighting men to whom they are eager to supply the best possible weapons in the greatest quantity and with the least delay. These men and women are saying to America, here we are, ready to serve our country. All we ask is that you let us use our energies and our brains to the utmost and listen to our constructive proposals for achieving all-out production. I am going to outline to you briefly this evening the constructive proposals of the CIO for reducing industrial conflict to an absolute minimum for increasing production. These proposals, which we call the Industry Council Plan, embody certain basic and quite simple principles to secure the complete and organized cooperation of labor, industry, and government. Before I go further into these proposals, however, I must say a word about the grave injury which was recently committed by the House of Representatives against all Americans who work for a living. In its passage of the Smith anti-labor bill, this bill and the other anti-labor measures now pending in the Senate were from the first a threat to the success of the whole national defense program and to the democracy which we seek to defend. But now that we are actually in war, to call them a threat is to put it too mildly. Their final passage by the Congress under present circumstances would be a brazen act of treason. It is inconceivable to me that patriotic members of Congress can even contemplate such action. The Smith bill includes nearly every anti-union provision which the worst enemies of labor have ever advocated. It would abolish practically every right secured by unions and workers during the past 50 years. It would virtually annul every federal law designed to safeguard the rights and economic welfare of labor. It would punish every individual member of a union through loss of his rights under the Labor Relations Act and through loss of old age pensions, WPA employment, and other forms of public aid. I had intended, when I first prepared this speech, to go into more detail on the Smith bill and the Conley bill and the Ball bill that is now pending in the Senate. I had intended to point out how small a factor strikes have actually been in our lagging defense production. All the partisan and anti-labor propaganda were contrary notwithstanding. I had intended to elaborate on how much more big business has been responsible for delays in production due to its sit-down strike when it refused to start production of aircraft, ships, and the like, until it had forced Congress to grant higher profits and lower tax legislation. But now that war has actually been declared, I recognize that the time for recrimination over past misdoings has passed. Now is the time for all Americans of goodwill, for all sections of our population, to get together in the spirit of national unity, to work out the greatest degree of cooperation in our common effort. Now, above all, is no time for punitive class legislation, like the Smith Bill, nor for any of the other measures which would shackle labor, create intense resentment amongst American workers, resulting in increased industrial conflict, and prevent labor from playing its full part in voluntary effort for all-out production. The CIO by no means takes a negative attitude in this question. Our recent convention in the interest of maximum defense production went on record to utilize all available channels of collective bargaining, conciliation, mediation, and other voluntary means to prevent industrial stoppages. To implement this resolution, we have proposed to Congress and to the President the immediate calling of a conference of representatives of labor, industry, and government to work out by voluntary agreement the best possible methods of peacefully solving industrial disputes and to lay down basic policies governing industrial relations. Such a voluntary approach, let me emphasize, is the American way, the democratic way, as distinct from the dictatorial and compulsory methods of Hitler, now proposed in the anti-labor bills before Congress. Let me also emphasize that this voluntary approach is the only truly effective way to enlist the full energies of a free people for national defense. The CIO has pledged to cooperate to the utmost with government and industry in achieving uninterrupted and maximum production. The Industry Council plan to which I have referred is the best, and I may say the only really constructive proposal advanced to make such cooperation effective. Under this council, plans will be set up in every basic and defense industry, including representatives in equal proportion from labor and industry, and with a government representative as chairman. It will be the duty of these councils to plan and achieve maximum production through elimination of all causes of friction, through the careful utilization of all existing facilities, and through timely planning of expansion wherever necessary. At the head of this structure would be a top planning and administrative board, the National Defense Board, with labor and industry equally represented, with the President as chairman. If anyone thinks that such planning is not needed, and that all possible has been done under the existing hodgepodge setup, let him consider such facts as these. The National Association of Manufacturers recently admitted that as of this fall, only 50% of machine tool capacity has been utilized. And the same organization reports a survey showing that in 18,000 small and medium-sized plants, over 2 million machine hours have been lost by failure to utilize available facilities and equipment. As to the peaceful solution of industrial disputes through the Industry Council plan, it would work out something like this. Wherever grievances and differences arise, there would be a plant committee to take them up at the source and to effect an adjustment through voluntary agreement between management and labor. Above this plant committee, there would be an appeals board, which would be the industry council. This council would take up disputes which failed of settlement in the plant with labor, management, and government representatives. The council would deal with the matter in the interest of the industry as a whole and the defense progress. With a voluntary cooperation of all parties assured, there should be few, if any, instances in which agreement could not be reached. But if any such cases do arise, they could be appealed to the top appeals board, which would be the National Defense Board itself. With the whole weight of government behind this procedure, and with a voluntary cooperation of industry and labor, continuity of production will be substantially assured throughout, without the necessity of imposing the final recommendation of the top board on employer or employee. At its recent convention, the Congress of Industrial Organizations went on record unanimously in support of President Roosevelt's forthright foreign policies and for all possible aid to the nation's fighting Hitlerism. It offered the Industry Council plan as its contribution to the full and complete prosecution of the National Defense Program, of unlimited production of those materials needed to implement our foreign policy and crush Hitler. Here and now pledging their voluntary effort to protect all plants in which they are employed and all machinery in those plants against sabotage. Where plans for this purpose have not already been made, I am calling upon our unions to arouse their members and to plan carefully for reporting and preventing any kind of sabotage. Finally, I want to emphasize again that the worst blow which could be struck at the voluntary effort to which labor is pledged would be to enact such repressive measures as the Smith Bill and the other measures pending in the Senate. Write and wire at once to your senators and to the President of the United States. Urge the defeat of all such efforts to shackle labor and to sabotage defense. Urge the adoption of our proposal for an immediate conference of industry, labor, and government representatives to plan the best possible methods by voluntary agreement of eliminating industrial disputes. And finally, call upon our legislators and the President to place into effect the proposals of the CIO Industry Council Plan for achieving maximum defense production.
Keep Labor Free has been the subject of an address by Philip Murray, President of the Congress of Industrial Organizations. Mr. Murray spoke from Washington. Here is a bulletin from the NBC newsroom in Washington. The White House has just announced that President Roosevelt will speak to the nation over the combined NBC networks tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. This is the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
From the NBC newsroom, a bulletin from Springfield, Illinois. Governor Dwight Green of Illinois tonight announced that he will call a special session of the Illinois legislature, quote, probably before the holidays, to deal with the present defense emergency. From the NBC newsroom. In Washington tonight, there is the official acknowledgement that the Japanese onslaught on Hawaii is more serious than at first believed. The White House says that one old battleship has capsized and several other vessels have been seriously damaged. It is the heaviest loss in the nation's history. And some sources suggest that perhaps the United States fleet may have temporarily lost its margin of superiority. Meantime, on the home front, quick action is being taken for national security. In Seattle, there will be a radio blackout tonight. The reason for the elimination of radio broadcast in the Seattle area is a report that a Japanese aircraft carrier may be lurking off the Pacific coast. The Treasury Department has seized all Japanese businesses and banks in this country, and the Supply Priorities and Allocations Board says that this country is engaged in an all-out victory program calling for an outlay of $150 billion. The America First Committee has called off a rally to be held Friday night at Boston Garden in Boston. The rally was to have been addressed by Charles A. Lindbergh, who today admitted that we must retaliate against Japan. The Philippines suffered 6 air attacks today. Casualties are above 350 dead and wounded. Wake Island, the island of Guam, and Hawaii were bombed, along with the British naval base of Singapore. British warcraft are said to be attempting to forestall the landing of more Japanese troops in Malaya. These reports have come to you from the NBC newsroom.